right, welcome back to episode 56 of the Slide In Podcast. We get into some questions today that were asked by a listener and a guy named Eric, who also has his own podcast called The Struggle Is Real. So go check them out. Apologies for the delays here. I had some health issues that we'll get into a little bit in the podcast, but I'm back, feeling good, feeling better than ever. Hopefully we will return to our regular schedule soon. In this episode, the power goes out, so we're going to try to film two and get back to our regular schedule, but we were only able to get one done because the power went out. So at some point, the video is going to get really bad, and that's why I'm recording this now as opposed to in the studio, because it's very dark in there. But today's show, episode 56, is brought to you by the Kelly Inn in West Yellowstone, just a few hundred feet from the National Park's entrance. While they're open year-round, the shoulder seasons, April, May, September, October, and even November, perfect time to visit. Madison inside the park is now open year-round, which means you can fish streamers at dawn and be back in time for a hearty hot breakfast with the family. One of the best parts about the shoulder seasons is being able to explore the park while the crowds are light and the animals are active. Streamer bite tends to be a more consistent during these months as well. Seriously, now's a great time to use code SLIDE2025 for 15% off your stay. It's a great Christmas gift for, you know, the whole family to come out to West Yellowstone. Go see animals, go see fishing, snowmobiling. Go fishing. Snowmobiling's huge in the winter, but now's a perfect time to book for the spring. Typically spring streamer fishing is my favorite time of year in this area. So check out the Yellowstone Kelly Inn at www.yellowstonekellyinn.com and use promo code SLIDE2025 for 15% off your stay. The Kelly Inn, family-friendly comfort and world-class fishing, all in one spot. All right, thanks, folks. Enjoy the episode. All right, welcome back to episode 56. God, I've been gone a long time.
Really? Didn't seem long.
Yeah, welcome back to the Slide In Podcast. I don't know what episode this is, but we'll fill it in at some point. Kelly, it is really good to be back. Really good.
I'm glad you're happy.
Yeah. Sorry for missing a week, everybody. I went through through some not fun stuff, tonsil surgery, and then, of course, I had a giant abscess form and had to be rushed to the emergency room.
It's called his head.
To my head, yeah.
Didn't take it off.
And then, fuck, infections, everything. So I've got a chemical cocktail in me right now that could cure the bubonic plague.
You did the last time you were in here. Dog, shut up.
Yeah. So antibiotics for, you know, 3 weeks straight. I'm feeling great. Stomach is in absolute shambles, but we're going to persevere and get a
podcast.
Might shit
his pants. You never know. Okay, enough of that.
It wouldn't be the first time I've done that.
They don't need to know this.
If you're an adult and you claim that you haven't shit your pants at some point, I just don't believe you. You're lying. So let's jump into some questions, unless you have anything else you want to talk about.
You sure you don't have to go home?
We're starting hot.
Good.
Sorry, I've been gone a lot. I got a lot to say. I didn't speak for 2 weeks, so.
God, it was heavenly.
I know. A lot of people were happy. All right, let's jump into some
Not
questions.
The queen. Did you see that?
Oh, Lucy?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. That made me smile. Thanks, Lucy. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you should.
She's
the one that started that. Howard Crosston's wife, Lucy, said that, what'd she say? You had a, she loved your gravelly something.
Yeah,
voice.
It was a complimentary kind thing to say. So thank you, Lucy.
Howard and I both threw up in our mouths.
Yep. Also a lot of folks reach out to me and just wish me well, and that was very kind, and I appreciate all the support. So tough stuff, but I'm back and feeling much better. So let's jump into some questions. This one comes from Eric. He emailed us, and Eric has a podcast called The Struggle Is Real.
Oh, yeah.
So Eric's a steelhead guide in Oregon, and he hosts the podcast with we're just doing the same bit they did on their podcast. I can't remember the other guy's
Pardon
name.
Me. This dog's going to get shot or out? One of
the struggle.
Let's shoot for that.
Is real.
Out first time, shot second time. Sorry, excuse
podcast.
Me.
Podcast.
So they did this thing on their podcast. They were talking about their favorite podcasts or their favorite fishing podcast, and they mentioned our show, the Slide In Podcast. They're very complimentary, and it was really funny because Eric's like,
you know, how I feel about those trout.
Yeah. He's like, he hates trout. Well, he doesn't hate trout.
Well, I don't know. He didn't say how he felt.
But so I listened to the whole show, and he said, he said he hates trout fishing in Oregon because he doesn't have brown trout there. Not many. It's a long
drive. He's got the subspecies.
And he's like, you know, if I could throw streamers at banks for browns and cutties, I'd love that. But we just don't really have that. So, but it was funny what he said was, that's a different one. He goes, you know, it's Kelly Gallup. You might have heard of him. And then some other guy, Barton or something, Samsonite. Yes,
goes through a whole bunch of them.
And so, of course, now I can't remember the other guy's name, unfortunately. But he, I know he's in that band Portugal the Man, which I'm a big fan of. And theirs is like, it's fun. It's a fun podcast. It's like less fishing centric, but they're just funny, interesting dudes bullshitting. So got to give him a shout out. And he emailed in a couple questions for us. I think he's a pretty consistent listener. So wanted to start with his. Thanks, Eric, for sending this over.
By the way, speaking of people that don't know your name, and you never remember Bramer's name?
No, I just don't know how to say it. I know his name.
You're going to list you then. But even his aunt sent you a good wishes or something.
Oh, that's kind. That's very kind. Thank you. Okay, so Eric says, hey, fellas, first off, appreciate you doing the podcast. I know it's a ton of work and all there's... And although there's a million white men out there sharing their decades of wisdom via the interwebs, I find it challenging to continually tune in every week to any one show. As someone who may or may not be known to have an intolerable dislike for guiding trout, y'all have done an exceptional job at captivating my attention every episode. Well done. So with that, I don't trout fish. I also don't trout guide. But I will be trout fishing with Dad for his 80th birthday next year. And there are plenty of browns in said river.
Oh, I didn't even realize I read this. I didn't realize this was the same.
Yeah, so this is Eric. Yeah, and he's super interesting dude. Go follow him on Instagram, Eric Dellinger or something like that. I can't remember.
Yeah.
I have a problem with names. So he says, there's plenty of browns in said river. We'll be fishing from a buddy's boat, bless his soul, and I'll be leaning too far to either side of it all day, frothing the water from the back of the boat. As a mediocre trout fisherman at best, would you suggest throwing back upstream behind the boat to likely targets? My game plan is to try and stay out of my buddy's way while he's guiding Dad, but any other tips are appreciated. Thanks in advance, and remember, you matter. So thanks for the question, Eric. Kelly, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, there would be this, I don't know, whenever the last time we were together, the guy Trip a Field that sent in this thing and wanted me to, and I was rereading Bates, not the book that I realized later, not the book that Streamers and Bucktails that he wanted me to be reading, which I read. But I got thinking about, you know, because it's good to have your mind jogged a little bit. And old school, like we did that show on, we kind of modernized it a little bit and we were using all what Tripp was talking about, these old school flies.
It was like the Mickey Finns and the Montana.
And they're really, and he's partially right. A totally unknown fly, which was the Troth Bullhead, was kind of big. And the blondes were kind of big, but not by today's standards. And they were never, the thing that we did different than Bates and everyone else is we did very active retrieves. Right. Yep. And we completely changed the tail first down, which is not bad. And I got thinking about this, but we have had such an influence on how people fish their flies that it's almost like they've forgotten that there still is the other way. You can still let a fly dead drift. You can still, and even back then, they didn't necessarily always, I mean, my dad, you know, I remember watching my dad and Harry Wagner throwing streamers and on cane, you know, that's what they fished. And they would pump the rod now and then to get it to move. But for the most part, that was a kind of a dead drift, almost like a wet fly thing. You'd let it go down, pump it occasionally when it was getting close to the bottom and do things. And that was the Trough Bullhead. It was an interesting thing because it was developed. I did not know this. I'm thankful. And I'm sure I've read it many times. Very thankful that Tripp wrote me that letter because then I'm rereading it, and
just
I get
just spinning.
No, I went. I yeah. quit reading the first Bates, the original book, and I went into the '70s version of Bucktails and Streamers. And it said that Al Troth designed that fly on the Madison for our big browns, and that how it was weighted heavily, and it went down, and it gets down the bottom. And but he said he was very. There was no movement to it.
I thought you invented streamer fishing, though.
I did, but yeah. You know, incarnate. But yeah, so. But they were talking about how they got it to the bottom, and it was really, and they jigged it now and then,
yeah,
right? Keep it off the bottom. But then he said it was only good for really big fish, and little fish wouldn't eat it. And then he went on to say, and our river went to shit, and it's not worth fishing here anymore. So he moved over to the Beaverhead and Big Hole, which where I thought it was from. And I thought it was a Big Hole fly. But he explicitly said that it was Beaverhead Big Hole. And our river got too popular, and all the big fishermen fished out. And he said his very first cast on that Troth bullhead, and I don't know, I think I imagined where he was standing, but I don't, somehow I was thinking it's down by Eagle's Rest. But at any rate, his first fish was 4.5 pounds.
Woof.
You know? Woof. So it's like, holy shit. And then, but at any rate, back to this, you know, we have changed things the way we do things with the bank hunting, and it was, you know, and there's no, we don't passively throw flies.
Right.
And so, but that doesn't mean, just like when we were fishing them in that show, when we were running Mickey's and we fished Royal Coachman's and we fished, I don't know, Gray Ghost, Black Nose
Dace, right?
We fished Muddlers.
Was that the Pocket Dweller? I think that's, remember that little, it's got mallard on it, it's olive over white.
No, I didn't fish that.
We didn't? I thought
I brought
we did.
It. No, I brought it. I didn't fish it. I might have. I said, I like little mini marabou muddlers. But so just to get back to that, you know, just because for the most part we huck them out and burn them or jig them or do something and come perpendicular to the flow or slightly downstream, it doesn't mean that you can't still throw a streamer out. Like if you're in the back of the boat, you just need to understand that river left is not where you get to play. You know, for most guides don't want you going over their head. But if you're throwing a fly upstream and mending it down and working it, you're more passive. Mm-hmm. You're still going to catch fish. It's not like there weren't hundreds of thousands of flies or fish caught in the old days. Yeah, by
probably millions. Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, it's not like just because, and whenever you do something like I do or did, you get pigeonholed. Like, I only fish streamers, you know. I still fish dry flies probably as much or more than I do streamers. And nymphs. I mean, I love all of it. But, and it doesn't mean that, and I can't, I don't know how to, people only hear the little tiny piece of shit they want to hear.
Yeah.
And it's just like Tripp when he was saying, you know, give up the nonsense. I never said I fucking invented, Jesus Christ. I mean, I'm reading shit that's going back to 2,000 years with streamers. I mean, it's like, there's just, people have been fishing for a long time and they weren't thinking about, they were just trying to catch a damn fish. But we did change. When you go watch streamer fishing, you go to any river in the United States, I don't care, anywhere in Europe, you, maybe not Europe so much, but because there's a lot of tradition there, but you will see 99% of the people are very, and it's one of the things I bitch about all the time, they're very mono. They've got one technique, throw it to the bank and rip that thing off. It's like they don't have two or three speeds. They don't have a jig. They don't have a stall. They just pull it off. And so that's what you see.
Right.
But it doesn't mean that you can't go out and throw and just do, you know, throw it upstream and just let it drift down there and touch it every once in a while, particularly your smaller flies. I mean, a really big fly with all kinds of movement in it kind of turns to a gob of shit out there. I mean, it's made to be moved.
Right.
But you take any of the traditional wing sets or bucktails, tricolor bucktails of any sort, any hair wing, like a 9-3, a Gray Ghost, a Mickey Finn bucktail, you know, black, any of those old school flies, a Royal Coachman. Remember how we kicked the living shit out of that Royal Coachman? I haven't sold a Royal Coachman streamer. And which, by the way, it is not a big.
It's an inch and a half.
Yeah, maybe 2.5 if you get a 4. But they don't sell them. And that's one of the things Tripp said, you know, they've always had big streamers in fly shops. No, they didn't.
A lot of fly shops still don't.
Yeah, and they did not. And if you looked, and he brought up Dan Bailey's. Well, I have stared at the wall of Dan Bailey's. It's one of the coolest shop things I've ever seen. They killed all their fish. Everybody killed their fish back then. And they did a template. They took a board and they traced that person's fish. And you go under there, and then they kind of painted them green with spots and stuff like that.
That's cool.
And then it had the guy's name, river, and fly, and date, right? And I think the number one fly there was a spruce, mm-hmm. light or dark. And it was, you know, a big spruce was 2.5-3 inches long. That'd be a big one,
yeah.
right? And so that, and when people like to say that, I started tying in 1964. I started playing in these fly shops, anyone I could find. You can pretend they were here, and you can pretend Maine trolling flies were here back 40 years ago, and people were fishing. It's such bullshit, nobody was fishing them. I don't care what you think. They did not throw a Maine trolling fly. First of all, they hinged a lot, and they didn't have the equipment to throw them for shit. You didn't.
Yeah.
Joe Brooks might have, and Bates might have, now and then, but if you look at the reality, and that's I'm just saying that a big bucktail back in the day was 3 inches long,
yeah.
right? A polar chub. This could be a trivia question. When I look through Bates and all the books, my favorite streamer is a polar chub tied by whoever tied it originally. I think it's the most elegant, perfect fly ever. And it was considered big, and it was that big.
Yeah.
And a ballyhoo might have been 3.5, right. but they weren't like our flies today. The flies are much bigger. And I've always said the same thing. When in doubt, go smaller, don't go bigger. When things aren't working, go smaller, get more action out of your fly, because big flies take a pretty advanced angler. But for this guy in the back of the boat, which we get a lot, and take your flies down, settle them down, you know, 2.5-3 inch feather wings, things that aren't going to kill the guide if you do hit him. Don't be afraid to run doubles either. I love to do that. I absolutely love running a little smoke wagon or a little gray ghost or a Mickey or something behind a 2.5-3 inch regular fly.
Do you ever fish like a Zoo Cougar with a smoke wagon behind it?
Not so much on the Cougars.
Do you think that?
I have, but
yeah.
I prefer one that's sinking more. I want the front fly to drop down.
Sometimes
I even put a bead in front of the streamer, get the front one down, and the back one's just kind of popping all over.
So that's something I know you talk about. I've seen you do it a ton, when we're out filming, and it's something I just don't do that much that I want to do more next year.
15 years ago, you couldn't find me without a double standpoint in the day. And then I kind of, as flies got bigger and the bigger fly thing and the changing the way the flies swam and trying to, and I was more interested in developing movement and just things, right?
Well,
I put on a second fly. When Johnny and I are on the snake, I said that 2 episodes ago, we're getting our ass kicked. And he asked what I was doing. I said, something you're not going to like. And put on a double, put on smoke first cast. And then shortly thereafter, another one. And it was like, there's things. Sometimes they're attractors, you know. Who knows why they eat? There's all kinds of theories. But anyway, back to this guy in the back of the boat. When you're fishing river right, for those of you who don't know, right and left is always on the direction the river goes. So you're going downstream. And so river right is to your right, looking downstream. So river left, if you are a right-handed angler, is kind of taboo for the back seat because your line's going over top of the guide. So if you can angle it upstream a bit, and so you're not coming, it's still taboo. Johnny could care less.
Right.
You know, Johnny and I had a long conversation about this. He goes, I don't give a shit. I'll tell if it's somebody that really truly can't fish, he says, I might have him do something different. But usually I just put my hood up.
Yeah, hood up and wear full cover glasses. Well,
any guy that doesn't wear glasses is a freaking moron. But so if you'll hang river left and do a little less active throw it up, and you don't necessarily have to throw it upstream. right? You can throw it straight across and pause it and mend it down and let it, you know, one of my mentors, Tom Noms, used to throw wade fishing. He called it dredging. He'd throw it pretty much up, you know, to 45 to the bank, do a giant mend and just sit there.
Yeah.
And let that fly go head first straight downstream. Tom, nobody caught more fish than Tom. He was fishier than shit. I mean, but it's boring as hell and you lose a lot of flies on foot in particular.
That's a big Skagit technique is, you know, drop that fly, you know, essentially letting it dredge. And then as soon as that line kind of comes tight or gets more tight from the current and that fly accelerates, a lot of time that's when I find they'll eat it there.
Yeah. But it
works from a boat.
But
right?
From a boat, you get the eternal drift. And so, I don't know how to go back in time to retract all the things that people think I do, but I am the last guy to throw a bank and rip it off constantly. I do not like to do that. I mean, it's cool when it's happening, but it's kind of a monkeyed up, you know.
I feel like you normally start like that way for about a minute and a half.
Yeah, just
and then you're like, I'm going to try slowing it down. Yeah,
bring your heads down different angles.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like if one trick pony is one trick pony. And so you're in the back of the boat, you're fishing just so we get to finish his answer. Kind of let river left. Is taboo, again, if you're a right-hand angler. The right side is absolutely wide open to you. So you may encourage the guide if he doesn't want you, but then the guy in the front of the boat's going over the front too, right? Yeah. So that's why they don't really like to bank out.
It's really good if you're friends with a lefty.
Yeah. Man, that makes life really... So the right side of the bank for you if you're a right-hander is wide open, but I would encourage you to scale your flies down, maybe run a double, but for certain, do a longer, less aggressive, straight back at you. And you might find out that you've got a whole new way to fish. And you may stop just ripping off the bank.
Yeah.
Like I said in the beginning, 99% of the people I see fishing, all they do is throw straight across that bank and rip that son of a bitch back. They have no other game. They don't ever stall fly. I've seen Russ do it. I've seen Alex. I've seen Johnny. But I just rowing the Madison or the Yellowstone or the Big Hole, wherever I'm, that Missouri, wherever I happen to be, I see one thing going on.
Yeah.
And it's just choof, choof, straight back, right? And usually always trying to hit the same. I'm just very adamant about the fact that you should be looking downstream.
Always.
And people will they'll try to pummel the same spot like three or four times. You don't have to hit all the water. You should be, your peripheral vision is your friend. You should be looking downstream because it's not all the same. And you should be identifying. I remember I told a story about taking a girlfriend that bitched about guides. And I said, I'm going to take you out, make you a better angler for guides. And I'm going to yell at you all day. And I says, you know, you're pretty, well, what Russ would classify it as, it'd be a good day for the Kleenex sales.
Oh, man.
It was like,
that's a good
one. She was a good angler. She just needed to realize that the guide's job isn't, that they have, you know, you should be able to identify your own water.
Right.
The guide's looking for other shit. They're trying to tell you every spot. But if you can't look downstream 30 feet and identify that's where the fish is and hit it, you're just, you know, you're that person that I watch it all the time. It's like, wow, it's a super, like, their arms must be exhausted at the end of the day. They're just such a panic to get, and you'll see them, like, just keep hitting this spot. They'll be robbing the guy in the back. See him turning, going way the hell up, and just missed a bucket that's got the only fish, but they don't treat the water unique. It's like one big, the fish
it's
are everywhere.
The water.
Yeah, instead of pick it. I mean, I would challenge anglers to do, if I could give you a tip, get in the boat and don't cast.
Yeah.
Look at the freaking water, look at the banks, and take a little memory check every fish you've ever caught. You'll find that the water's pretty similar. You'll find that the buckets are pretty much the same. The holding zones are the same, the parallel, everything that you've seen a fish.
Yeah, there's common threads,
and you
right?
miss so much with this You know the old joke about, you know, run down to the pasture and the cows, and the old guy says, why don't we walk down and all the cows? Oh, yeah. it's a very old joke. If you don't know it, somebody will tell you. But it's the same thing. Go, if you will just slow down and pick your water apart. Great anglers. You look at the, we were supposed to have Bucky on, but, and I can, John Stenerson, one of my favorite guy anglers, just so many, Russ, Alec, I mean, Chad, some of these guys that I fished with quite a bit. There's no sense of urgency.
No.
There's a real sense of pick your freaking water apart. And you'll see, I mean, I've been with Russ and he's sitting and talking to you and all of a sudden just stops and just throws, and then he'll finish the conversation.
Right.
Right? And it's like, and when we started, we're all the same. When we started, we beat the shit out of that water. Mm-hmm. But after a while, you realize, you know,
they're not everywhere.
Well, when you start guiding, you start going, hey, no, wait. Almost like you're looking at the bucket and you got two flies going out, you know, synchronizing back, and you're trying to tell them, you know, hit 6 feet, watch where the front guy's fly hits, and then the back guy try to make it someplace
it's
right?
Blowing your load too early.
Yeah.
Or just like,
get it where it belongs.
Yeah.
And so that if you'll slow down, which would be in the back seat, to me is, I don't mind the back seat. I don't at all. Yeah. And I don't have to cast as much. I don't catch less fish. I had Jerry Dennis fish. I've told this story before on one of these, where Jerry Dennis went back in the day when I was writing the book before it was done. The most instrumental guy in that book was guys were Jerry and Jerry. I mean, Bob was my co-author, but Bob came in later.
Jerry Dennis and Jerry Wilson.
Yeah. And Jerry Dennis, in particular, Jerry Dennis. I wanted to write the book with Jerry because Jerry's a great writer. And that's how Bob and I got together, was that Jerry basically told me towards the end that he can't do it because he had a big project. It was a real project, right? And I said, what? And he's, but we had just done, and Russ was massively, Russ likes to take credit for being the boat rower, because if it wasn't Jerry Wilson, it was Russ. But the first 2 years of that was the three of us, four of us. And one day Jerry Wilson and Jerry Dennis, and I was in the front of the boat because that was kind of the deal. Jerry Dyson, now you take the front because I want you to, you know, I'm just going to mimic what you're doing and stuff. And I'm in the front, and I don't remember the exact number. I think it was a dozen, but it could have been 20 something. I think it was a dozen or something like that, where we were using the same flies, and our flies went in and would hit so close to one another, sometimes looked like they were hooked.
Yeah.
And my fly would come out coming down, and his would come kind of straight across, and the fish would break and come out, see both flies, you could see it, and do one of these, and eat Jerry's fly every time. And he's in the back of the boat, right? So never did figure out if a competitive, you see bass do that a lot, like you'll have bass on and other bass will try to take the lure that the fish is hooked on out of that fish's mouth.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, that's Johnny Dumb.
That's king of it. Yeah.
I mean,
it's king of the hill.
Mongo's got to eat, right? But
Mongo's got to eat.
But we never did figure it out. But what I do like about being in the back boat, which I actually prefer nowadays, I mean, if I've got super sticks like everybody we fish with and, you know, all the guides or whoever we're with and Johnny, I have no problem being back there. They're going to hit what they think's right. I'm going to get if I want that again, I can do it. If I don't, I can pick it out. I always just sit there and watch. And I'm also getting to the point where I just really like to watch the fish respond.
Right.
You know, I like the last two times Johnny and I were on the snake, I would have rode all day, really. I don't really need, I mean, if he caught a 36 or something, I'd be pissed. But if I thought I would, but not that pissed. But I mean, if it's still rolling fish under 30 and I have as much fun watching anymore.
It's cool to see
how,
catch fish.
Like see how he throws it, see how Nate throw, how you throw it, how, you know, Andrew throws it or Chris or whomever. And then Chris is going to say, you never fish with me. I have to take.
You know, he is listening to this, sitting at the computer in the back punching air right now.
Okay,
love Chris.
That's going to be, Chris is my next.
Chris is going to be on the podcast soon. Yeah, we're going to have Bucky on. We're going to have Chris on.
I got to take Chris fishing. He's just always gone. He fishes. I mean, he's got plans.
Yeah.
He is. Nobody fishes more than Chris. He knows. He's going here. He's going there. He's going here. He's the guy we talk about that's been all over the country. It's nothing for Chris to drive 8 hours to get to a location.
He fished 40. The last tally I saw on Instagram, he fished 41 days for Steelhead this year.
Yeah.
We're 7 hours from Steelhead.
Yeah.
And he works 4 days a week.
And that's why he wasn't on the back before you had to get your surgery.
Yeah.
He couldn't. He wanted to do a Saturday. He goes, dude, you know it's going to be 50 in the Clearwater Saturday, right? And I go, what are you saying? He goes, just looks at me and go, copy.
Yeah, he called me and he's like, dude, I'm so sorry. I think I need to go fishing. I'm like, absolutely. There's going to be so many snowed in -40 days and we'll have you on go fish. So, looking forward to that.
Back of the boat, finish your thing. What was it, Eric?
Eric, back of the boat.
Just let me finish and then you throw in that. Slow down, take your time. Try some old school technique. Try doing some, you know, just let it roll a little bit, jig it a little bit. If it's an active eat, you can still do that. You can still active from the back of the boat. You can throw river left and get a bow in your line, and you can tap your rod from a sitting position like this and get all kinds of action because the line is static. It's got a big bend in it. You're connected to that. Yeah. Everything you touch that rod does that to your fly. So you can still do some pretty active stuff. Don't be afraid to run some jiggy, like put a little split shot. I like to use 3/16 tungsten beads. Don't be afraid to run a dry line. It is such a blast. And one of my favorite ones is, I mean, just a regular streamer, just flat out, just let it fish. But I prefer to have a little bit more leeway when I do that. I don't want to necessarily just be stuck in the back. But I really like to take a swivel, you know, and just put a weight above the swivel and put your fly 2 foot back. 2 foot back. You can let, and the leader will go down because of the 3/16 tungsten bead above the swivel, and your fly will be fluttering all over the place. And everything you do to it is, we did a whole show on it. We did a whole show. We did all kinds of techniques with it, but the most productive is when we were throwing that. And you get to stall your fly. You can strip it back a little bit and then just kill it.
Yeah.
Just because your fly's drop and drop and drop. And kill it right when you see a rock or you see a log. Or let it do that, woo, flutter thing. Freaky. I mean, we were giggling the whole, like a bunch of little girls were out there just every time. Look at, oh, shit, you see that? Yeah, I saw that.
Well, and what was funny about that day, too, is like the majority of the fish we were moving on those small flies were not huge brown trout. There was a lot of like 8 to 14 inch fish.
Mm-hmm.
Still super fun. And that day on a 2.5 inch fly, you hooked the biggest fish I've personally ever seen in the Madison. Jumped it, lost it. And then that kid, I can't remember who he guides for. His name's Finn. He's an outstanding skier. But he landed what we think is that same fish. Yeah. It was 26 plus.
Yeah, 20 yards from where we hooked it, right?
Yeah. 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 And like that fish has been seen. I think Andrew named it Meg.
That's that one that straightened the hook out?
Yeah.
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 And that's another thing. Like one of my favorite flies, Conehead Woolly Sculpin. Somebody just asked me this week, and somebody texted me, and I said, I keep threatening to do the year of the cougar where I fish nothing but cougars. And they said, well, I have another. And Woolly Sculpins. Well, and blondes. And then I'm like, oh, shit. But I can tell you, when you go back in time before all the articulated shit, well, no, Russ's peanut was there, and I think the TNA bunker was there then, but for the most part, we fished cougars, woolly sculpins, and I don't think Russ didn't fish the stack blonde, he fished the blonde.
Gotcha.
He didn't like the hook orientation of the deal, but you'd be hard pressed if you're dying on a. The thing about those single hook flies is you can make them do a lot of things. You can't make a bigger fly, an articulated fly, necessarily go slow. Some of them you can, like a peanut envy.
Yep.
But your bigger bait fishy stuff, man, they're really designed to be moved. And so if you go back into that single hook, that would be, and I would tell Eric, I would have a white number four woolly sculpin, a tan, and a black or olive, or all. I like twos, but you can four. Like when I always tell people, when in doubt, go smaller.
Totally.
They'll still eat that. That one I hooked, that giant, was on a number two.
Yeah.
That was on a woolly
sculpin. But like that's a big fly.
Yeah, and it's a cone head. It allows me. Woolly sculpins are just so versatile. They can white ones can be bait fish. They can be anything. You can do them head with heads or without. You can buy them just straight up, no heads, and put a slide of freaking cone down your leader.
Yeah.
If you want to do it that way, it's just. But if you go into the game thinking you're getting robbed because you can't throw a giant articulated fly and rip the shit out of it, you're wrong.
Right.
Then you may be on the one trick pony thing, and that will give you a day to learn to do stalling and jigging and make the best out of it.
Yeah. So there's somebody far smarter than I would have some wise quote to add to this, but there's something along the lines of like hardship drives innovation,
yeah.
Right? Like when you have a slight problem, then you kind of try new things and sometimes you get rewarded for it. The other thing I'd add about Eric's question is the sort of etiquette and logistics of being in the back. The guy in the front has the right of way, if mm-hmm. you will, in terms of casting angles, and you don't want
to. He's not looking at you.
Right.
You are looking at him.
You should be able to see him. And so, yes. You know, if your dad's up in the front of the boat throwing dry flies or a bobber rig, he's likely going to be kind of quartering downstream in front of the boat. And that means when he picks up, his line crosses into kind of your zone if you're throwing behind the boat. So, you know, you just imagine your back casts. Are they going to make an X or are they going to be parallel lines? So ideally, you're able to sort of match their angles. The other thing you can get into is trying to time it out where, you know, you see that dry fly is down in front of the boat, then you can make your weird angled cast up backwards.
But I will assure you, when you try to time that, your dad will set the hook on a fish and miss it, and you'll come back, and you will hook his line.
Yes, and it's and it's your fault in the back. It's always your fault.
No matter
in the back.
What, it is your
now,
fault.
Now, the guy in the front, the guy in the front can try to be predictable. And that's a much appreciated, like when I'm in the front of the boat and you know, you kind of develop this rhythm, right? Cast, retrieve. And then all of a sudden on one, I'll see a spot and I don't, you know, I'm not ready to land my fly. So I'll do it one more back cast essentially is like a, you know, it's a 1.5 second stall or something. Yeah. So that boat's 3 feet further down. So then I can hit my spot. And then I tangle with the guy in the back. That's on me.
Yeah.
That's where I'm like, my bad. Unpredictability,
you know, you'll see
whatever.
You'll see people calling out their cast. That's annoying as shit as a guide.
Oh, like
casting now. No, you're not going to do that all day.
Shh, not
guy
the
in the back, out. You watch. I'll untangle this guy. But casting now.
Casting.
I had two guys that fished together their whole life. And man, it was so annoying.
Casting
every pickup, but they never say it on a hook set. You know, they'll go like this and pick one up, and here it comes back. And that's when the guy's like, you know, he didn't. If he misses the hook set and it goes backwards.
What's the worst?
Power going out.
Power going out's bad.
We never planned for one of these.
No. Let's see how this looks on the camera. We're gonna do a quick pause here. That's interesting.
Well, our mics aren't gonna work.
No, they're all battery.
Oh.
Yeah, they're all tied into the camera.
Oh, and wasn't that interesting? We have 60-mile-an-hour winds going around, and our power just went out.
Yeah, so we've got, it's going to get cold.
I was thinking it was time we could start drinking.
so the ISO is jacked way up on this camera, so it'll be grainy as hell, but we're still going to do it. So, Where were we?
We probably won't shoot a second one today.
No, probably not a second.
the power here is always the right above our shop up on the hill.
That's where it takes them
an hour to get here no matter what.
Yeah. Yeah, we're not close to anything.
42 miles from town.
Yep. Okay, what were we talking about? We're talking about casting angles. One thing I wanted to mention here before I forget. Ron Sorensen owns Lamai River Lodge. Lamai River Ranch down in Argentina is like total primo South America fishing trip, right? Johnny used maybe to host the trips best there. Energy. Maybe the best. They fish the best river.
I would argue that it's probably the top.
Yeah. And Ron, a lot of people know Ron. He's been in this industry for a long time. Incredible angler, incredible caster. I mean, he does it all. But he came in here the other day and had a really interesting discussion from him. I learned so much in 25 minutes of chatting with him about how they fish that river down there. And because he throws a lot of spey rods down there, but from boats. So he said he'll go out, you know, with one of their guides or whoever, and he'll be in the front of the boat. And this is done single hand spey rod. It doesn't matter, right? This is a technique with any sort of rod. But they essentially are swinging out of the boat, right? It's almost like back
dry flies.
Dry flies. Yes. So they're skating dry flies.
So they're skating.
And those giant browns are coming up and annihilating skating dry flies. But he says—
And he has a record of a fish coming out of a— that he witnessed out of a 20-foot hole.
Yes. Yeah. Coming straight
to a dry fly, mind you, skating.
Skated.
And not a big dry fly. Not a Russ Madden scorpion type dry fly.
No, it's like a 8?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Spider style.
So, and I know he said, you know, the majority of the time the clients are swinging streamers more traditionally underwater, just super cool stuff. So that's another thing. If you're in the front of the boat and you want to experiment with some other techniques, you've got floating lines, you know, your dad at 80 might not be retrieving streamers.
No, he's going to, he said he's going to be dry fly fishing.
Did he? I can't remember.
Maybe just said he's going to be hogging the front.
Yeah, I think hogging the front. But yeah, that's a valid technique too. I mean, guys do that for steelhead with gear constantly.
Yeah, but just know your numbers are good. Like when Johnny went down to Lemhi, it changed their world.
Yes.
Because they saw how many more fish would come. But, and just as a sidebar to this, for those of you who hunt, he's also starting a hunting program, which would be, I think last year is the first year. But it'll
Robin
be in March.
In Argentina? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a bird hunting. And Mel is working with Ron on all the guns and stuff. So we were talking about maybe going down and doing a cast and blast for a... But if we do, we'll need about 6 people to join us.
Yeah.
So there's... anybody that wants to go fish and hunt, let me know. I haven't decided if I'm going to do it or not. I'm tired of traveling around. But I think I'm the only guy in the industry that's tired of traveling and... I've done less of it than most people because I don't like it.
Right.
But we're talking about my girlfriend Mel owns Shedhorn Sports in Ennis.
Go buy
some. Biggest gun store in Montana. And so, yes, go check out her website. But to go down and, you know, do upland and do fishing, be able to split it.
That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, that one might get me down there.
Yeah.
So I'm sure Herm Thomas is listening and he'll go, and there'll be other guys.
Yeah, there's talk of some other slide folks hosting trips as well. So it's something we might try to dive into.
We did it for a couple of years.
Yeah, Johnny and Jeremy did it. And then Johnny went and had a kid.
Johnny, I had to, but next year he'll be probably back on this. But anyway,
So thanks for the question, Eric.
Good question, Eric. Yeah.
You wore that one out pretty good. What I was going to ask you before the power went out, I remembered. What is the worst problem guides deal with day to day? Like the thing that just wears you down? I know you have talked about being asked too many times how to get back to the truck.
No, that's the one that gets you to quit.
The
question that finally gets you to retire.
So you should tell that story, but I want to ask this question too, and we can get into it next. But
I've told the story on here before, I think.
I think you have. But what I'm wondering is like, what's the worst thing guides deal with on a day to day? I'm not a fishing guide. I fish a lot, but mostly with people who are really, really good. So the thing that I'm imagining is when we were talking about backcast crosses, mm-hmm. right? If you have people fishing double nymph rigs and they tie them up, like right when you're getting into a good zone, that would, I mean, my blood would boil on maybe the second or third one of those, let alone the seventh or eighth.
Well, I mean, you're not put out to be or made to be a guide.
I have no patience.
Then you shouldn't be a guide. And anybody that doesn't have patience.
I know, I'm not.
I've never seen, it's not true. I've seen a couple that are okay, but I wouldn't want to fish with them.
Yeah.
And I would love to call them out, but I would hate to hurt their business. But some are pretty good friends of mine. They don't work for me, though. You, as a guide, you don't, that's not part of the deal. The first, I've said this all over the world. When I started guiding, when I started when I was 15 and did one whole trip. But I always thought that everybody that I was going to take fish, I grew up in the American sportsman at generation, the 60s. And the first American sportsman was Jack Dennis, that I fly fished, I think, was Bing Crosby and, the guy that was Baloo in, what was his name? He was in a Jungle Book. The guy's voice, he has such a great voice. He's a comedian, actor, did the voiceover for Jungle Book. I just remember that scene. I was watching
that
video.
I've seen that a million times.
But yeah. He's just a, just as but at any rate, and then I realized that, and I thought everybody's going to be Kurt Gowdy and this guy, right?
Yeah.
And I realized, I tell everybody the same thing. It says, so far I've yet to find somebody who can carry a tune, let alone fish like Kurt Gowdy.
Right.
So Bing Crosby, there was Bing Crosby, Jack Dennis, and Kurt Gowdy is the one I'm talking about. And the other one was Kurt and the other guy. But so you got to realize that you're there to be a teacher. But as a guide, I mean, the number one thing that irritates, there's a couple things. One, like how we talk about our guides, we ask them what they want to do. I was listening to Russ do a podcast on, I forget who it was. I don't know. I think it was, I didn't know the podcast, but he says, you know, gets guys that want to go streamer fish. And he goes, then 4 hours in, they're staring at each other through the back of the boat, don't even know you exist. And they're like, what the hell did you get me into? Because they don't really want to go put in their time. They want to go be heroes because they hired Johnny or Russ or Alex.
When you start getting the comment, not very productive today.
Yeah. And then that's one, but that's a high expectation. And you, the high expectations that the trophy hunters, you either are one or you aren't. If you at about 4 hours in, you're not.
Who's Nathan's client? The guy who only fishes his own flies. I think he's a Scandinavian dude, but he always tells Nathan to grab a guy from the shop to sit in the back of the boat. We want to go streamer fish. And he goes, I just want one.
Yeah.
I want a shot at one. So they go,
but he really means it.
He says, I don't give a
shit. There's a real
shit.
Big difference between this ego freaking maniac that shows up with all his new shit.
Tim. I think his name's Tim. I don't know. Nathan loves this guy and just raves about him. But yeah,
I know who I can't remember his name either. But you know, that's a big one. The it's always, no offense. Yes, a lot of offense. A lot of offense to men whose fucking ears don't work. Women never make the same mistake twice. They actually hear when you say "don't do that," and they don't.
It's
and when you say "pause your back cast," and they do. Guys don't listen so much, especially ones that are, you know, that part gets to you where you, but it's just still part of the game. You have to go, you better be as good a guide at yourself as you are at your clients, because if you're pissed off half the day, you don't think everybody notices it. You know, that's going to be an influence on the client also. They're going to go to shit. And if you train horses, they tell you one thing you never want your horse to think is that you're mad at them. You just don't, it's simple, you know, you just don't.
Right.
That's not what I want you to do. Mm-hmm. And you got to think of it the same way. You have to, if your client isn't doing something and you need them to, you are a shit guide.
Yes.
Your job is to teach them to do what you need them to do.
My client sucks. Well, you're the teacher.
Yeah.
My kid's stupid.
Yeah.
Well...
Exactly. Exactly. But I've never, the thing that, if there's something that did piss me off is, I mean, I really can't think of, it would bug me when I couldn't relate to them, but I always realized this is something you're not relating. Bruce Richards was one of my only real mentor in casting and watching, because when Bruce and I, when I started as a kid in the 70s at the Ranch Rudolph Fly Fishing School, giant school, we had like 20 instructors, I mean, 100 and some students, and all the instructors donated their time. Wow. It was crazy. Yeah. They come from Maine, all over the place. I mean, Lefty was the head guy for a while, then Pete Cross, then Bruce took it over. But Bruce had this just, it's what makes him such a phenomenal instructor. And I remember I used to roam around and try to help guys that weren't getting it quite right. And if I couldn't get it, then Bruce would take over. And then Bruce would explain it to me why I didn't do it right. Right. And he has this thing that looks at you and he's like, Kelly? And I'm like, oh, shit. And you're a musclehead. Okay, I get it. But it should be, you know, you don't see Johnny pissed and you don't see Nate or Andrew pissed, no. Right?
Might be on the inside. Well, that's, but they're not going to show it because they're professionals.
When that horse doesn't do it and then stomps my foot, I'm probably not the greatest either. I mean, it's like, and Mel doesn't even think about it, right? They're just like, or Jake shoots.
Yeah.
What a freak show he is. I never seen anything like that in my life. Just seeing him ride my horse, it was unreal. But I digress. So I think that's just the wrong attitude to come into it with. You know, if you've got something that pisses you off, that it's got to be your fault. I mean, people that won't listen. One of the best casters I used to get, Mark Mackle, used to always, and he's one of my, Chris Gamble, who passed last a year and a half ago now, but two of my favorite customers in life. Mark's like, he's a great athlete. Everything he does, he's great at. Spectacular skier. Water, snow, I don't care. Great caster. But he'd cast that somebody 70 feet straight down to the bank in front of me. And I'd be like, dude.
We know how you feel about that.
I don't do that again. I will throw you out of this boat. Do not do that. But he could do it, right? But he's eating up a lot of water in between there that's not for both of them.
It's not getting touched, yeah.
Yeah, and so, but it was... But I didn't have to tell him too often. But every once in a while, he'd do it just to bug me anyway. But it was always a perfect cast. So it was kind of like Ray Jeff did the same thing. Tim?
Yeah.
I told him, I swear to God, one more time.
Got that fancy shit.
I am going to. You're missing so much water by doing that shit. And I said, and he said to me, well, most guys like the fact that I can hit each side of the bank. I says, I do too, but I don't. It's not how we fish. I would prefer you to hit that. Yeah? Dumps a 100-footer. Kiss my ass.
Here's my golf analogy, okay? 320-yard par 4 and you're pulling driver when all you need is, you know, 180 up the middle. Have a great shot into the green.
Yeah.
Instead of blown it OB. Right?
Yeah, and I would prefer it was a par 3 and we hit, you know, three shots and we hold it,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And that's fish. That's when I talk about not liking distance casting, it's the lack of the fishing knowledge that
right.
If the cast needs a 100-footer, damn, I like having you in the boat, right? I just never have seen it.
Yeah, so where is that?
But I've seen a lot of distance casters that blow three or four runs, and a run might be 10 feet long, and they go for the money shot and miss all the... And if that doesn't pan out, we've already lost the other three in front of it.
One giant cast versus four strategically placed.
Planned out, thought out, and retrieved. And that's my job to teach him as a guide. You know, I really would prefer we hit this. And when we get there, we hit that. But
okay,
I don't think there's one that... I you know, if you want one that's not... You know, like Eric said, I'm going to be getting yelled at for being out of my stanchion all day. That's one that...
Get the fucking stanchion.
If you don't know what a stanchion, if you're listening to, if you're
leg
a drift boat, it's the middle of the boat. And you put your legs in. Some boats don't have them. You stay in the middle of the freaking boat. Because if you go to the left and put 80 pounds of list into my boat, my left oar goes underwater.
Yep.
Which, if something's going to go underwater, I prefer it to be something on the left. But it, I need to row with both, yeah. Right? And I,
it is amazing
and it messes
how
the
little...
person in the back up too, or front, yeah. Whoever's doing it. Everybody starts doing this lean shit, and so that's one that is not. It's like, hey, get your fat ass in the middle.
And it's
you take a really big guy. You take Chuck Jeffries.
Yeah.
Chuck or Andy. Where's Chet? Right. If Andy.
Sorry, boys.
Takes. I mean, they're big guys.
Yeah, they're big dudes.
I mean, they're not fat. These guys are big.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
I mean, I think Andy played for Bam or something. He's a big dude. Andy can be a footstep off to the one side, right?
Half a footstep.
Yeah. I mean, and the boat, literally, your oar will come up out of the water if it's hanging. And it's like, Andy, I'm in the middle. And he is. But he's still in the stanchion, but it's like, whoa, what a difference, you know? And then you take, you know, some, whatever, Jeremy and put him in the boat. He could jump on the other side. I ain't going to feel him. And he's 140 pounds.
I was going to say, Kyler's 114
Kyler.
Pounds.
Yeah, and yeah. So he's,
but if you take one step to the side in the back of the boat, you still feel
it. Yeah, you feel it, but it's not going to list you up
in the
water.
You're not
going to
sink.
But, I mean, but yeah, there's, but that would be the only thing.
Like there's a safety aspect to it, too. Especially on this river. We hit rocks.
Well, this river, I mean, you're on the Missouri or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, whatever, you just lean to your ass to the right more, or whatever way they're on. But another one that sometimes irritates me, which isn't guide, it's too much gear.
When
there's just like, it's
people bring a backpack and a boat bag and a cooler.
I had customers that, Bruce and Neil, I've talked about them before. They were such a, they're just them. But one time it was 105 in Traverse City. 99% humidity. Both bring these giant bags and they have neoprene waders. I have got the shortest running shorts man's ever seen. Total.
Nobody wants to picture that.
Oh, yes, they do. And a tank top on and a big hat, right? It's 5 a.m. It's 90.
Yeah.
And they've got jeans. That's another one. You do not wear jeans fishing. You can do it in salt flats if you think you're flip pallet, but that's the only person that should ever do it. Yeah. You do not wear jeans. You definitely do not wear jeans under waders.
What about jean shorts?
That's what ended up happening. They brought neoprene waders. They have t-shirts, button downs. They have khaki pants on and those shoes with the pennies in them. That makes me a little nervous anyway.
With the pennies in them?
Penny loafers.
Gotcha.
That makes me a little nervous when people wear those.
Yeah.
But we get to the river by 11. They are both doctors and they're both in heat stroke. Two separate days. First one goes down and I said, he's puking out the back and you can look at him. He's going into heat stroke. And I said, holy shit. And right after they both lit up a cigar, I said, you got to get out of the boat and you're going to cool down. Well, I'm going to throw you out of the boat or you're going to get out of the fucking boat. I don't care how you
get
do
in the
this.
Water.
And to take your pants off. He took his pants off. He's getting in the water. Take all that shit you've got on. And they had gear bags. I mean, like we could have gone to, you know.
Wait, you said these guys are doctors?
Yeah.
That's frightening.
So I cut his pants off, right? And he had jean shorts.
I'm going to clip
that. I go, you're going to wear this? Well, I know I had him take his pants off. And then I took my knife and I cut the legs off of him. You're going to wear shorts. And the next day, the other one did it. Identical. And they're sicker and shit. And they're in the back just hurling. But we still had, and he said, well, and they're very proper guys, right? And he's got these big bags and they got neoprene. And says, what the hell are you going to, what? Oh, he says, well, I'd rather we brought them with us. I said, in case of what? We take a right and end up in fucking Antarctica? Are you shitting me? It's going to be 105. But we have, so now I got an extra 80 pounds of shit in my boat.
Yeah.
That I have to row.
Right.
It's still 105. I don't care if I'm 230 and can row that boat and break those oars. I'm still the one working.
It's still,
right?
What,
it's
20% harder, something like that?
100 pounds extra?
Yeah.
I mean, are you kidding me? They were light guys, didn't help, but. It was just one of those. That's one of those things where you're on the Madison. I know I like to prep for everything. I make sure I got rain gear for no matter what. But you know, you probably don't need thermals with you at 95 degrees. Right. And
I mean, so I started doing this because Jake was doing it. And I liked the move. He would have one plastic grocery bag. That's what he'd bring in somebody's boat. So he has one plastic grocery bag. He's got a snack. He's got a box of flies and a water bottle. And then, you know, he's got his nippers around his neck. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, one small bag. Perfect. Yeah. Versus the guy who's bringing the giant boat box and a backpack and a camera bag and everything. Like
At least the cameras are not like they used to be. Imagine 35mm days. Guys bring tripods. They bring video. They bring...
What I have to bring every time?
Yeah. But this is so he could just, in case he was going to stop fishing and start videoing
right. His
buddy catching a fish. And I'm like, did we use any of that? No, we did not. I know one that bothers me as a guide. And this is just impossible to fix. But it's the what do they call them? The Little League dads.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the guy that didn't really make it in the big time.
The one who's trying to live vicariously.
And they bring their kids with them when they're eight.
Yep.
And say they can fish all day. And I say, well, that's funny because you can't. You can't really say that to a customer. You can't say, well, like one of the things that I always break for lunch. And they say, we don't need to break for lunch. I said, yeah, but I need a break from you. I'm the one pulling these oars. Yeah. And believe it or not, you don't know it, but by 2:30, the wheels fall off your wagon so fast, it's frightening.
You're gonna be done.
It's like a Little Rascals show. Here they come, the wheels are going everywhere. Every cast is going into my head. But they'll bring their kids and say, oh, he's great. He's a stud. He can go all day.
He's the best, yeah.
8 hours, no problem.
Tiger dad, kind of.
Whatever they call it. But there's no, it doesn't mean anything. This is anybody that is one of those doesn't think they are. But I always told my customers, I said, I will not ruin your child. I'll take him, but I'm going to plan a 6-hour day, right? And I'm going to have an option of me roll that son of a bitch out in 4. Because when your kid's attention goes totally, and I've seen kids that can't, totally. Not in cold weather, you know, everybody thinks their kid can, but most people when they go fish don't realize that when you fish in a boat with a guide, you fish 8 hours.
It's so
tiring. And you don't do that in your real world. When you're taking somebody, you're talking and you're not fishing and you slow. When your guide's there, he's pumping you. He's working you, right? So I would tell them all the same thing. When that kid's attention span breaks, we're going to go frogging. We'll go look for snakes, dude. We'll go in the woods.
Go play in the mud.
We'll swim. Yeah. I don't give a shit. And you can fish. But when his attention's going, I'm not going to be the son of a bitch like Johnny who went on that with it. Whatever you do, I mean, saltwater guides, I think they're better than they used to be. They used to be assholes, just always yelling at people. Johnny almost quit fishing because he got a guide that yelled at him so much. I think he was 14.
Yeah.
And he said he yelled at him so much, and no instruction, hungover, you know, just like yelling. So he's got, and part of that yelling at people is an excuse so that if they don't catch fish, it's on them.
Yeah.
I told you. You're just yelling. You're a shit instructor.
Blame displacement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I would tell them, I won't ruin your kid. And almost every kid, first, another thing that people don't realize, if you're in a drift boat, there's a lot of physical activity you stabilizing yourself in the front of that boat. And
it's
rivers
tiring.
Like this.
Yeah.
On the Madison.
Legs, core.
You know, banging into a rock now and then, trying to net a fish, popping this, drop.
It's a balancing act.
So that's one that bothered me as a guy. But nothing drove me crazy. That may be the thing that bothered me the most, but I never broke my word. When I took a kid and he went to shit, in particular, fall steelhead trips, I had big heaters in my boat, and we would just stop. I would say, nope. And even if dad says, oh, he's good, I said, nope, he ain't. I mean, I never ruined a kid. I never went out and said, you're going to do this. Maybe my own. I don't know. The girls didn't fish too much. Maybe I yelled at them. I remember once we were fishing bluegills and I yelled at them because I forget which one. Delaney would never let Madison hold a fish. And I think one of them got a huge bluegill, got a 13-inch bluegill. I've never seen one in my life.
Jeez.
We're in Craig Phoebe's private lakes. It was the biggest cat I've never seen like it in my life.
Dinner plate.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard mounting fish all my life. I hear guys coming. I got 10-inch bluegill. Oh, my ass. You got a 10-inch this too, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm like, holy shit. And she gets it. It wasn't a Johnny 13. It was like 12 and three quarters.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Its mouth was as big as a 50-cent piece. I picked it up. I've probably mounted 100, maybe 200 bluegills and fished them my whole life. I never got 10-incher in my life. I mean, it's like, then here pops this thing on a half a night crawler. It was cool as shit.
That's awesome.
But I might have yelled at Blaine, let her hold the fish. I doubt it. They're just, but they'll come around.
I'd love to hear from our listeners who are fishing guides or fish with buddies in boats, like what pisses them off. I love reading those kind of comments. They're good stories.
Well, it's interesting because it's been used as a learning tool.
Yeah.
I mean, but guiding your buddies is one thing.
Right.
That is not a, there is, I've never been pissed off guiding a buddy. You fish to fish. I don't give, you fuck it up, it's all right. I don't give a shit. I'll be up there sooner or later.
Oh, I've gotten pissed.
Have you?
Oh, yeah.
I never do.
Had a day with one of my buddies.
I mean, when you fish with Johnny,
yeah,
and you say, where do you want to be? This is great. He doesn't care.
Right.
It takes every moment to learn something else. There's not, you want to fish the bank all day? Well, I don't. So, you know, fish the middle of the river. Great. Yeah. Fish for buckets. Do this. You want to be close? Although last time we fished, he said further back. Many times. A little further out, a little further out. And I, you know, probably was daydreaming a bit. And I've got him 40 feet from the bank, and he wanted to be 60 because he wanted to fish the bucket off the edge of it. I says, just say you want to fish the fucking bucket.
Yeah.
Just don't say that. How about 20 feet out?
Yeah, every once in a while I've gotten a little too intense about something I'm trying to work on or something, and or it's just in a bad mood, got my period, whatever.
You're a prima donna.
Yeah, I'm a big prima donna. Everybody knows that. I wanted to share, just, it's not fishing related at all, but you're talking about Little League dads. I have this story. I will not share who it was, but it's someone I know coached a Little League team. And there's this big draft process, right? So you show up at the field and
draft
every kid.
For what?
What's that?
Draft for what?
For Little League. So like you know, the parents that are coaching the team, they get their kids on their team. And then you draft kids. So all the kids show up at the field and, you know, they take BP, they go out and try to catch, you know, pop-ups in the outfield. They take ground balls, they run the bases. So it's like a little mini combine, right, for the kids. And then, you know, you're taking notes on the numbers, that they're wearing. And then, you know, all the coaches get together and I think they pound a bunch of beers.
This isn't China, right? This
is America. No. And they draft. Yeah. So, this individual I know who coached Little League had, and you know, you all, like the coaches, the Little League dads that you're talking about, a lot of time their kids are really good, right? Because they love baseball, they're interested in it, they're, you know, pushing their kids into it. Mm-hmm. Not always, but they tell their kids to sandbag so that they're a lower draft pick, right? So that they're not a first rounder, so they still get their first round pick. Because if their kid's on their team, you lose that pick wherever he would go. So, I'm getting too deep into the weeds here, but the draft rules that I heard were, one, never draft the kid wearing jeans. Two, never draft the kid wearing glasses. Three, if it comes down to a decision between two kids, draft the one with the hotter mom.
That would be my whole theory.
That's just so funny.
That would be my whole
cracked
thing.
Cracked me up. The other one was don't draft the kid with the hyphenated last name. So there's obviously a lot of...
That one year I did... I'm the last sports guy on earth. My knitting club, I just don't even pay attention during football season.
Yeah.
Because they're already 100 deep into whatever happened to the Lions last week and what Texas is doing and this and that. And I don't give a shit about any of it, right? Never have. So one year, trying to pick my favorite team, I did it for 3 years straight, and the 2 years I won.
All right, sorry, minor technical difficulty. Actually, kind of major technical difficulty. Camera crapped out, so we lost.
Yeah, when there's nothing filming, that's kind of a technical.
Yeah, it's kind of bad. It's kind of on me, kind of my fault. Sorry, everyone.
I didn't hear it click up.
Yeah, I never heard it stop. So I think we lost about 10 or 15 minutes of bullshitting about loosely fishing-related stuff. So we're going to wrap up the show because, I black
out. Yeah, my feet are getting cold too.
Yeah, it's getting cold in here. So we'll wrap it up. We may not have a show next week. Power went out. We're going to try to film two this week. And I've got, you know, ski instructing and Christmas and all that stuff. So we really appreciate everybody's, I guess, patience with us. And, you know, our listeners make the show. We try to produce a weekly show, and sometimes life gets in the way. So
a lot of apologizing.
Yes.
Yeah. You wouldn't if you wouldn't have had to get your tonsils out.
Yeah, if I didn't have to, yeah.
We would have had all these done.
If I didn't think I was dying.
You thought you were dying. I'm not going to call you any names. You thought you were dying.
I thought I was dying. Well, what scared me is when they thought I had sepsis and MRSA. That was about a four-hour window
You are the clinical definition of the person who...
Hypochondriac?
No, the person, whatever they call that person that gets on the internet and reads all that shit.
Hypochondriac. Think I have every disease.
My grandfather was a hypochondriac, my dad said. Yeah. But no, you read about all the shit that can go wrong.
Yeah, well, I read about the things that I had, and it turns out what I have is I've got a very, like, minor case of it. But for a while, I thought I was looking at it.
That's because you got on that interweb.
I got on the internet.
Yes.
It it really fucked with my mental health. I'm a pussy.
Much of that anyway.
For a moment, I thought, there was a moment where I thought, there was about, I don't know, 14 hours where, maybe more than that, where I thought I was going to have an 8 to 12 month open wound recovery, where I'd have to be laying on my
Whining, you're going to have one.
Oh, good. But I'm back. I'll be fishing next year, and things are much better. So,
yes.
Appreciate all the
kindness. Apologize all this shitty, and for those of you...
Horrible. This video is going to be horrible
truly,
quality.
Is it truly 16% watch? Didn't you say 84% don't watch?
No, I think that's typical for most podcasts, but... We started with such a big YouTube following that I think the majority of our viewership is still on YouTube. It's about half.
Well, the good
news
is that you'll look better in this grainy. So.
Exactly. Soften everything up. All right.
So, yeah, if you can see us at all, but we apologize for the power cut. But when you live out here, this happens a lot.
Yeah. We're going to have to come up with
something. We don't know when it's coming. Don't call me and say, when's the power coming back on?
Fuck.
Surely just ask me, do you know what happened to the power?
Yeah, thank God the phones aren't on right now. Any ideas?
So
those are real quick before we end. Those were some of my favorite days when I was working up here. My first year was when the power would go out in the summer. It's just kind of fun. Like we're in here, it'd be me, Matt, and Chris, and you know, you're taking down people's credit card info on a piece of paper and like, hey, we'll charge you later. Yeah. As long as you're okay with that, we can do cash.
Or just come back and we'll get it next when you come back, and we'll just write it down when you come back. People look at you like,
really?
Really? So you're only in here 20 times a month. I mean, I'm pretty sure you're not going to stiff me on. Or, but the people that would let you write their cards down, but you could tell it was like, oh my God. Oh my God.
Yeah. What are they going to do? Scam us?
Yeah. We're going
to. No.
Somebody here probably has the ability, but I'm not sure who it would be.
Yeah.
Not me. Yeah. And then I say 100 times, do you know when it's going to get turned on? Nope.
Yeah. Let me call the power.
And when you live out here, it's, you know, 6 times a year about summer. Winter's that's a more dicey.
We definitely wouldn't start drinking. When the power would go out.
Definitely
not. A little darker in here.
Uh-oh, beer's going to get warm.
Exactly.
We better get to
just a resource conservation. It's really, really important. All right, thanks for watching, everybody.
Thanks for watching. Hope you liked it. Hope it helps you out.